Now, it's CSL, Charlotte Sports Live.
Well, in typical Hornets fashion, never expect the expected. Charlotte closes the regular season with a come-from-behind win against one of the top teams in the East. But now, with the off-season officially here, changes are surely on the way for Buzz City. Welcome into an hour-long Charlotte Sports Live. I'm Grace Brill alongside Gabe McDonald tonight, and we have a lot to get to tonight. Lots of national headlines and some local stuff, too.
Yeah, absolutely. The NASCAR Cup Series hitting Texas, top speeds in Texas. Plus, we'll also rewind what ended up being a great 4 days of the Masters out in Augusta. But first, your Charlotte Hornets actually in a forgettable season, where they ended on a high note. Let's take you out to Cleveland for the final game of the Steve Clifford era. The Hornets in this afternoon in game 82 of 82. But despite having nine guys out due to injury, Charlotte actually kept this one close. The Hornets up one here in the third, but Max Strus puts the Cavs back on top with that triple. Strus with a 14-point triple-double. That's the first of his career. However, the Hornets, they start to rally as they look to play spoiler. Amari Bailey gets the steal, and then the other end with the slam, a 4-point lead for Charlotte with just over three to play. He would finish with 11 points off the bench. Less than a minute later, Hornets back in transition. JT Thor on the break. He gets in the lane and goes off glass for the bucket. Thor with a career-high 20 points in 41 minutes of action. Charlotte in front by five. Under a minute to go, 7-point game, and we see the dagger. Nick Smith Jr. was hit threes all game long, and this was his sixth, and it put Charlotte up by 10. The Rook with a career-high 24 points to lead all scores in this one as Charlotte goes into Cleveland and finishes the season with a double-digit dub, 120 to 110. Here's Cliff for one last time as the head man of the week.
I'm going to think about this a little bit, but I'm going to move on quickly. I'm excited about this next opportunity, and I know I'll learn a lot, and hopefully I can contribute. You know, what you want to do is you want to have a good summer of development in all areas, you know, progress with these guys that we have. There's a lot of younger, talented players, and then also through the roster. That's usually what a good off-season ends up being. And obviously there's some key guys that didn't play a lot of games this year, and how their summers go will be critical.
Now, Cliff may be ready to move on, but we sure aren't here on CSL. Our Mike Lissette is here with a look back at this past season, the ups and downs and everything in between. Mike, what's good?
Oh, Gabe, even though the Hornets didn't give us a lot of wins this past season, they did give us plenty to talk about. From start to finish, there was always drama. It always kept us guessing as to what would happen next.
For most of the Charlotte Hornets, the 2023-2024 season began with a win over Atlanta on October 25th.
Are you kidding?
I say most because that did not include Miles Bridges, who had to serve out the remainder of a suspension for a domestic violence incident the year before. By the time he rejoined the team, there was a bit of trepidation as to how he would be welcomed back by fans.
I mean, I know a lot of people feel a way about me being back, and I understand that.
However, Bridges really didn't need to worry. Within weeks of his November 17th return, his off-the-court incident was something barely mentioned. And that's most likely because there were other issues now facing the team.
Look at LaMelo go at it.
The biggest, of course, were injuries.
And that is the last thing you want to see tonight.
LaMelo Ball made it to January before he was shut down for the year with ankle injuries. The situation for Mark Williams was even worse, as back problems ended his season the month before.
We are super-duper shorthanded. Not like we're playing without one or two guys now. I mean, we got like five guys that would be in the rotation.
By the time the trade deadline rolled around, Charlotte was already out of contention. That's when the team's new owners seemed to decide enough was enough. Taking the lead behind the scenes, Gabe Plotkin and Rick Schnall sent Terry Rozier, PJ Washington, and Gordon Hayward packing, with general manager Mitch Kupchak apparently not too far behind.
We appreciate him both doing what he did for the organization and then welcoming Gabe and I and working closely with us as we got through this deadline.
By March, a new leader was employed as 35-year-old Jeff Peterson was hired from Brooklyn. Short on experience, but not on desire. Peterson promised better days were ahead for the team.
The goal is to turn this thing into the premier franchise in the NBA.
With new owners and a new GM on board, many wondered if Steve Clifford's days were now numbered. Turns out they were, with the team's winningest coach announcing his departure just days before the end of the season.
It's not the work part. Like, I don't think my problem is the work part. I think it's the being in charge part.
And so ends another year for the Hornets. It was another year of disappointment, but it was also one of big change. And while we don't know for sure what next year will bring, We can at least tell you it won't be as unpredictable and at times unstable as this one. Mike Lizette, Charlotte Sports Live.
All right, thanks, Mike, for that. Great work, as always. And the facts are facts, guys. This was one of the worst seasons in franchise history for the Hornets. The fifth worst win percentage at .256. First two seasons for the team come in third and fourth worst. And then we got the two Bobcat squads at the top of the list. Of course, the 2011-2012 team won just seven games. So it's been a very up and down season, more downs than ups, especially when you factor in the injuries. It's pretty much the second straight year where this team has had just bad luck when it comes to that. But I think today is still good to see, because at this point, you know, you have a lot of players, you're emptying the bench, getting a lot of these guys depth. So it's good to not have a sour taste to end the season, but now it's good that we can pretty much start fresh and move forward now that the season is over with.
Well, yeah, and you look at, okay, it's you like that it gave them a good end to the season per se, but it doesn't really mean anything to me in terms of, because, you know, they weren't playing their stars or whatever, and it's at the end of the season. But the fact of the matter is that this team did show that they can compete against certain teams.
Yeah.
Whether they can do that consistently and through injuries and bench depth is going to be the big thing moving forward. Obviously, they're going to have I'm expecting a big offseason with who they bring in, and a head coach is certainly the number one priority with that. But it's just time, and you kind of get the sense with the full reset of it's not just a new coach, it's a new front office. You should feel a different type of good if you're a Hornets fan.
And the thing is, when it comes to the coach, you want to bring in one with, you know, just to establish a winning culture. That's something that we haven't had here in a long time. And I also want to bring up this report recently that we got from Woj from ESPN. Jordan Ott, a Lakers assistant, and Jerry Stackhouse, a name that we all know, being brought in for interviews. So they're really just kind of casting a very wide net here. There are some guys that Jeff Peterson's connected to, given his time in Atlanta and Brooklyn, but also some guys that are a bit, you know, maybe outcasted. They don't have connections. So I know we talked about Lindsay Harding last week, about her being interviewed as well. So I think it's good that they're kind of considering a lot of different people and not just people that they have connections to. But I think the main thing, a coach coming in to establish that culture and really build around a guy like Brandon Miller. I mean, if Victor Wembanyama doesn't exist, that is your rookie of the year. A great year for that man this year, certainly somebody that they can build around. So I think that was one of the biggest positives that we took away.
How much stock do you put into, like, obviously getting this coaching hire is crucial, but okay, I go back to, you know, and we want to give our roses to Steve Clifford. I just appreciate how he was with the media as well. And he's a guy you want to see do well, but unfortunately it didn't work out. But If they're not gonna listen, I don't know if it's like a culture or a team thing. If they're not gonna listen to a guy like Steve Clifford, that's proven, that has a resume here in the NBA, how, you know, you think bringing in a new unproven coach is gonna garner that kind of respect?
Just,
I just don't know
that
what
these guys can relate to. I mean, the team's getting younger and younger, and I think a younger voice could possibly help too. To somebody that can relate to these guys, because that's just the way the league is going right now too.
We shall see. All right, well, let's move on to the Masters. Final round today at the majestic Augusta National Golf Club. Tiger Woods not in the mix for a sixth green jacket. He did not have a good day either. This on the par 4 fifth. Woods slices his tee shot out of bounds, hitting 4 from the fairway. He gets it on the surface, but with 3 putt for triple bogey, Woods carded a 5 over 77 today en route to a 16 over finish, his worst 72 hole score in a professional event ever. Now to the contenders, Ludvig Åberg in his first major appearance hits a beauty and close on the par 4 7th. That was in there. But this one would stay with the winner. That's Scottie Scheffler, who sinks the 9-footer for birdie on 16 to take a 4-stroke lead. And Scheffler wins his second Masters in 3 years. And that's not even the best part. He and his wife, Meredith, are expecting their first child any day now. Scheffler says the moment was indescribable.
It's a very, very special time for both of us. I can't put into words what it means to win this tournament again. I really can't put it into words what it's going to be like to be a father for the first time. So I'm looking forward to getting home and celebrating with Meredith. And it's been a long week here without her. But I'm just looking forward to getting home.
Two-time Masters winner in the last 3 years. Him and Bubba Watson are the only two golfers to accomplish that, as Watson did it in 12 and 14. Yeah. But just really, really great golf played by him.
No, absolutely. I mean, he's special. I mean, we've seen this over the past few years, just him continue and continue to grow into being the best in the game right now. I mean, just an absolute dominant performance, shooting 11 under. But I want to give some credit, Ludvig Åberg, young guy, 24 years old, coming in, finishing second. Got to give him some props. He's definitely a name to watch for. But Scottie Scheffler definitely has cemented himself himself as the best in the game, and he has for quite some time, but that's a truly dominant performance. And congrats, I mean, being a dad, winning a green jacket in probably the same week, I mean, that's something.
I don't know who's had a better week than him.
Yeah, that's something. You can't write the script any better. I mean, you might as well make the Hollywood movie now. Just an incredible week, incredible weekend for him. But also, I got to say, it was kind of tough. I know Tiger's been dealing with a lot. It was really tough seeing him this
weekend. He made the cut. I just wanted to see him make the cut.
24 in a row, that is special. But the 16, it's like, you just, when somebody's that great and that just transcendent in the game, you want to be able to see them just kind of go out on a bit of a higher note. I'm not saying he's done, but just seeing that kind of
possibly. That could have been the last one we've seen. I wore the red just because of the flashbacks
to Sunday
the
red.
Tiger red. But yeah, no, I mean, Scottie Scheffler, number one in the world. Yeah. I think him and Tiger are the only two to be ranked number one and win the Masters. Yeah. So really great golf. The thing impressive about him, though, too, is that he's saying the emotional maturity that he has now. And you see it in the pressers. He's just not a care in the world. Yeah. I mean, when you have a kid coming, maybe that takes more precedence over that.
Truly a special talent for sure. Congrats to him once again. Well, NASCAR's return to North Texas, a drought the size of the Lone Star State officially comes to an end. The Cup Series most popular driver is back in victory lane. We'll show you how he did it coming up next.
A steal by Abada in the back post. Abada shot! He scores! Abada boom!
Abada bing, Abada boom. A great call by Voice of Charlotte SC Will Pelagic last night for Leal Abada's first goal in MLS. Big night for him and a big night for the crown. We'll tell you about it next here on Charlotte Sports Live.
Back here on CSL, Charlotte FC had the bank rocking last night as they kept a home unbeaten streak alive, Grace.
Yeah, Charlotte now unbeaten at home in 13 straight matches in MLS play. And even better, they keep the streak alive with a win over an Eastern Conference foe in Toronto FC. Charlotte scores three goals and earns 3 points last night in a 3-2 win over Toronto. The Crown gets revenge over their Eastern Conference rivals from earlier in the season when they lost up north 1-0. Lots of drama last night with fouls and offside calls. Kerwin Vargas, in his 50th MLS appearance last night, opened up the scoring with a goal in the 39th minute. And then maybe the story of the night, it was newcomer Leal Abada. He had a goal taken away from him earlier in the game, but he would get another chance and make it count, scoring his first MLS goal in the 70th minute. Patrick Agumon came in off the bench last night. He replaced Enzo Capetti in the 79th minute, and just 6 minutes later would score the game winner. Charlotte scores three goals and earns 3 points in a win over Toronto. Three goals is actually the best result for Charlotte so far this season.
It feels really good. The lads are asking me for an extra day off for scoring three goals, but I've told them that I keep saying, you know, put chances there for players and, you know, they'll finish them. The best players in the world, we saw Liverpool in the week get beat at home against Atalanta and 3-0, and they've got some of the best finishers in the world, missed a lot of chances. It happens, but you've got to create them quality chances for them players and keep doing it, and they've got to keep making the good runs. And, you know, I thought the subs made a difference as well. I thought Brett came on and, you know, great ball from him for the goal, you know, made a difference for us, which is what I've been asking for.
Dean Smith has such a great sense of humor that you just so appreciate as a member of the media. But this was awesome for Charlotte. I mean, because the story with this team, not only, a much-needed win, but the story with this team since I've been here covering them has been they concede these late goals and then they don't come back. I mean, they kept fighting and fighting and fighting. And through adversity. I mean, there was a couple calls that that the crowd didn't like. They had Leal Abada had his first. They called it offside. They called it offsides originally, but I was told that it was actually a foul that took that goal away. And then he gets another one as well. Great for the newcomer to get one as well. But just a really good fight from Charlotte FC.
And you mentioned him coming in. I mean, we're seeing, you know, just the energy that he can bring. I mean, that's one thing that we've talked about when he made the move over here is just how much of a spark he can bring, and it's good to finally see him in the lineup. But also them being a lot more aggressive on the attack, especially there towards the end, because typically we see an early goal, then they kind of, you know, take their foot off the gas a little bit. It was good to still see them be aggressive on the attack, because that's one of the main things that Dean Smith has talked about all preseason and offseason long, or all season long, is just how much more aggressive they're going to be, how much of a different brand of soccer we're going to see. We finally saw that last night.
Well, yeah, and Dean Smith even said, too, just as having the guys that came in off the bench. You see Patrick Agumon, you know, he came in off the bench and then had an immediate impact, and he mentioned Brett Diagre as well. So you're getting guys involved in different ways and late as well coming off the bench, which is awesome.
Definitely what you want to see. Next match coming up next Sunday right here in the QC. But now we're going to take you from the pitch to the racetrack. The Auto Trader Echo Park Automotive 400 running today in Texas. See that three times fast. Kyle Larson leading the field to green for the third straight week. He would go on to win stage one, but we see trouble for the five in stage two. While under caution, Larson loses one of his rear wheels. He would have to serve a two-lap penalty for this incident. Many people wondering what even just happened, including this fan out there in the stands in Texas. Now we move to the final lap of stage two. Ross Chastain breaking through and winning his first stage of the season as he holds off Bubba Wallace for the top spot. Good news for Larson, though, is he would get the free pass to get back on the lead lap at the end of the stage. But after the good, there was more bad for the five. Zane Smith bumped by Austin Dillon, which results in Smith spinning out Larson for another caution. Chase Elliott and Denny Hamlin in quite the battle with eight to go when the caution came out. And here we are with two to go, same two up front. Elliott in the lead going into turn four, and that's when we see Hamlin, spinning out there. Elliott so close to taking the white flag, but instead we have another yellow, which sends us to overtime. Hamlin would end up finishing 30th after leading 37 laps. Hamlin out of the mix. The battle for the checkered flag now between Elliott and Chastain. Elliott with a solid lead going into the backstretch, but Byron maybe helping out his teammate a little bit there, bumping in Chastain into the wall. That would result in another caution, and that is all she wrote. For the first time since October of 2022, Chase Elliott, NASCAR's most popular driver, takes the checkered flag in a Cup Series race. The drought is finally over.
Couldn't be more grateful for this journey and kind of the path that, it hasn't always been fun, but, certainly have enjoyed working with our guys. We've been just working really hard and really well together. And like I said, it hadn't always been fun, but we've enjoyed the fight together. Boss, thank you. Thank you for sticking with me and just really, really proud of this. And appreciate all the folks back home that have stuck with me and helped us get back on track.
What a day for the number nine team. That's Elliott's first win in 42 races and win number five for Hendrick Motorsports this season.
All right, well, from the fast lanes to the fastest 2 minutes of sports, it's time for Quick Six. Mike and Gabe are in the hot seat, and after a long hiatus, it is our good friend Andrew Brightman back with us. Brighty, we missed you.
I'm so happy to be back. I thought, again, I'd have your homemade cookies waiting for me to welcome me back, but we'll let it slide, girl. Let's go.
I didn't get to bake this weekend. I'm sorry. All right, 2 minutes on the clock. Let's go. Andrew, you're up first. Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods. Who's the next great golfer?
I would say it's almost like a combination of Scottie Scheffler and Brooks Koepka. The problem is Brooks Koepka plays on LIV and he's always dealing with injuries. He's got the five majors. I want to say Scottie, he just needs to keep winning. But if we see performances like that, we're probably going to see him become the next guy. He just needs to win after mid-April. He's never won a PGA tournament after April 14th, believe it or not.
But he's got two green jackets, and today that sounds pretty good. All right, Mike, other than a fairy godmother, what do the Hornets need to win a championship in the next three seasons?
I think they need more shooters, but if you were to say the one thing they need, a guy that's going to completely change the game for defenses, that's going to draw defenders over, and that's going to kick and drive out and set up other people, that's a lot to ask for in this generation, though.
All right, Gabe, do you think the Panthers can win the NFC South this season with just the moves they made in the offseason so far?
So far, no. I need to see a few more moves because right now I would say, honestly, I've been looking at the Bucks, maybe even the Falcons with Kirk Cousins as the favorites right now. I mean, the Panthers, let's wait until draft time, see what they can pick up, see what other depth they can add. But, I mean, the division is probably going to be wide open. They might have a shot. We'll see.
All right, Andrew, all these pitchers going down with elbow injuries in Major League Baseball, how does the league fix its pitching problem?
It really just comes down to a fundamental level. Scouts need to be stopped being so obsessed with velocity. That's what it's all about now. If a guy comes into the major leagues throwing less than 98 miles an hour, it's like, oh, he's a finesse guy. Remember Greg Maddux? Guy won four straight Cy Youngs with throwing 89, 90 miles an hour. All about location, location, location. That's what we really got to get back to.
True in real estate and in Major League Baseball. All right, Mike, O.J. Simpson died this week. Who's another athlete that's remembered for something other than the sport they played?
You know what's crazy? I'll say a crazy one. Michael Jordan, because I think there's a whole generation of little kids growing up that just know him as the guy on the shoes, not the guy that actually played basketball. This is a true story. This has come up in classrooms. They said, the guy in the shoes. George Foreman, another one. Obviously, a boxer. You got the grill.
I love them grills.
Okay, real quick. Diana Taurasi, mm-hmm. Gabe said, had some words about Caitlin Clark. Do you think that she will be able to be a star in the WNBA?
She'll be able to be a star now. Doing exactly what she did in college, averaging 30 a game, it's going to take a minute. She might get there, but she's going to still have that same star power. I mean, she's an elite generational talent for sure.
We shall see. All right, now without their ace for the remainder of the season, the show goes on for the Atlanta Braves. Up next, how they bounce back to win yet another series early in the season. Back here on Charlotte Sports Live, Major League Baseball is facing a major problem when it comes to starting pitching. The league is seeing injuries increase at an alarming rate. Big names like Shohei Ohtani, Garrett Cole, and Jacob DeGrom are already recovering from elbow injuries. But just in the past week alone, the conversation, for lack of a better term, reached a fever pitch with more starters being shut down for season ending, including the Braves' Spencer Strider. After making just two starts, Braves' ace Spencer Strider is done for the rest of the 2024 season. Strider underwent surgery on Friday to repair the damage in his UCL in his right elbow. Strider avoided Tommy John surgery that he previously underwent in 2019 while playing at Clemson. This time, an internal brace was used, which has allowed pitchers to return to the majors in as little as 9 months, whereas Tommy John typically takes 12 to 18 months to recover from. Strider had a 20-5 record last season and led the majors in strikeouts. He posted a 7 ERA and 12 strikeouts in his only two starts this season. All right, well, Charlie Morton would get the start today for the Braves in the second inning, and Brian De La Cruz takes him deep, and that would tie this game up at one. We go to the top of the fourth, Braves with a two-run lead. This is Adam Duvall at the plate, and Duvall says bye-bye baseball. 415 feet to center field, and that put the Braves up 4-1. So we are tied again in the sixth. Miami's Nick Gordon, he crushes a two-run shot over Ronald Acuna Jr. in right field, and the Marlins take the lead. It is 7-5, but there's a reason Miami is 7 games back behind the NL East leading Braves. Marcell Ozuna off the wall in left for an RBI double. Austin Riley, the scoring runner, and just like that, it's back to a one-run game. Then in the ninth, Marcell Ozuna. This is on the 0-2 pitch. He crushes it to center field. Gone. Marcell Ozuna leads the league in RBIs, and he brings in the winning runs today. Braves win 9-7 and take the series against the Marlins.
Dog right there, right down to the minors. Knights wrapping up their series against the Jumbo Shrimp this afternoon. Knights down a run in the fourth, but not for long. Carlos Perez gets a piece of one, and you can kiss that baby goodbye. A two-run blast to left for Perez. Knights go up one. That's home run number one for Perez this season. Jacksonville with tackle on two in the bottom of the frame. Then Charlotte takes the lead for good. Perez, once again with a hot bat, he singles to left for the bases juice. Brings in a pair of runs. The Knights, they go back on top by one over the Jumbo Shrimp. Very next batter, you see more runs. This time it's Wynton Bernard, the chopper to left center. That base knock will bring in two more runners for Charlotte as the Knights take a three-run lead for Jacksonville. And folks, they weren't done. A few batters later, it's Danny Mendick adding to the scoreboard with a two-run single of his own. That one getting out to left. The Knights explode for 6 runs in the frame, and they're going to win 9-4 to split the series of Jacksonville. Knights back at Truist Field this week for 6 straight against the Syracuse Mets. Now the college ranks, the Charlotte 49ers on the road in Greenville this weekend, looking to avoid a sweep at 9th-ranked East Carolina. Carson Bain trying to pull the Niners within one here. He hits that deep to center field, but ECU's Riley Johnson with the highway robbery. Take another look at this play right here, my friends. It's definitely a tough play by the Pirates outfield. All the way deep in the jungle, and it's a tough break for Bain right here. But he gets his revenge. He's back in the top of the ninth with the bases loaded. Right field flyer. And that is out of here. And that's a game-winning grand salami for Carson Bain. Oh, you thought darkness was your ally. Charlotte's second grand slam of the season. And it helps lift the Niners over 9th-ranked East Carolina. 9-7 the final up in Greenville. Charlotte back on the road Tuesday, taking on the second-ranked Clemson Tigers.
All right, the national champion Gamecocks aren't done celebrating their latest title. We were in Columbia today for the championship parade. We'll hear from the team next here on Charlotte Sports Live. Back here on Charlotte Sports Live, the Charlotte Checkers have named forward Brendan Perlini as the team's man of the year. Perlini, who has family ties to the military, has raised money throughout the season for the Charlotte Vet Center and has donated tickets throughout the season as well. The Charlotte Vet Center offers free counseling to veterans, service members, and their families. The English-born winger donated his $5,000 winnings from the Celebrity Chop Challenge earlier this year that I was honored to be a guest judge at. Perlini is now one of 32 finalists for the American Hockey League Man of the Year Award. Speaking of the Checkers, their perfect record against Hartford came to an end today. The Wolfpack getting the 5-2 win, and with it, their first win of the season against Charlotte. The Checkers had previously won the last 7 in the series. Charlotte has 3 games remaining before the playoffs begin. All right, well, celebration time in South Carolina. The USC women's basketball team was recognized during their national championship parade today in Columbia.
Yeah, the Gamecocks capped off an undefeated season by winning the national title. And as South Carolina Bureau Chief Shakira Speaks tells us, they got a hero's welcome today down in Columbia.
What better way to celebrate a historic season than with thousands of your most loyal fans? Well, that's how the South Carolina Lady Gamecocks spent their Sunday afternoon, with all the joy and smiles after a complete season.
38-0 and a national championship trophy have South Carolina women's basketball fans more excited than ever. Thousands of supporters crowded Main Street in Columbia to honor an extraordinary team and an even more extraordinary head coach.
At the beginning of this season, I don't know why I said this. They actually asked me to say something on camera. Give me one word that's going to describe our season this year. And like me, I said, expect the unexpected.
Staley's word was prophetic. The Gamecocks were the 10th team to finish the season undefeated, and the team also led the country in attendance in women's college basketball for the 9th straight season.
I just want y'all to know, we just declared the month of April our national champion women's basketball month in Columbia, South Carolina.
These players loved up on each other, unconditionally, created a bond, that created a heightened level of competitiveness to say, you can play us for a quarter, you can play us for two quarters, you can play us for three quarters. But by the time that fourth quarter comes around, we aren't gonna lose.
Fans say they couldn't be more proud of the team, and Sunday's parade couldn't have come any faster.
Man, it feels good just to know that Dawn has a heart of gold, and not only that, she keep her players together under one unified culture.
I think they were more ready to go this season when facing Iowa, and I think they learned from their past mistakes. And I think, you know, you live and learn, and I think they did an amazing job at the end, and they performed their best.
Senior guard Tahina Pow Pow is the only senior returning to the squad next season as Camila Cardozo heads to the WNBA. Pow Pow's last words to the crowd was, this season was a revenge tour, next season is a repeat tour. For now, reporting in Columbia, Shakir Speaks Queen City News.
Thanks, Shakir, for that. Yeah, the WNBA draft coming up tomorrow, where Cardozo is expected to be a top five pick. Well, Derrick Brown earned a bunch of money with his play on the field this past season. Up next, while the Panthers star D tackle wasn't all that worried about his future here in Carolina.
Plus, the Panthers could be in the market for a linebacker in the upcoming NFL draft, and one of the top talents at that position already calls Carolina home. We'll meet NC State's Peyton Wilson next. Tiger Woods may not have won his sixth green jacket at Augusta this year, but he did make history at the tournament. After carding a 72 even par in the second round, Tiger broke a tournament record, making his 24th consecutive cut on Friday. He previously shared the record with Fred Couples and Gary Player, but once again, Tiger stands alone in history, with his never missed a cut at the Masters.
All right, moving back to football, defensive tackle Derrick Brown for the Panthers got paid this offseason, and now he's talking about it. Brown spoke with the media earlier this week on his four-year extension with the Black and Blue. The Pro Bowler agreed to a $96 million contract, with over $60 million of that in guaranteed money. And after seeing the Panthers trade other former first-round picks like Christian McCaffrey and Brian Burns, many wondered if Brown was ever concerned about getting a long-term deal done here in Carolina. But Brown said he took the hands-off approach when it came to this one.
I didn't really know what was going on in the offseason. Kind of just stayed away from it, you know, let my agent handle it. And I spent, you know, the offseason doing what I normally do, is being a dad and training. So, I mean, you know, when the opportunity came about and the contract talk started, then, you know, I was excited and, you know, it got done and, you know, we're able to still be here. Community has been great to us since the day we got here, coming in the middle of COVID and, you know, not really knowing anybody besides the people that live in my neighborhood. I mean, that was a challenge, but I mean, it was an awesome one, I think, in the long run, and we've just kind of found home here.
Good to have Brown locked up here in Carolina. Here's a projected breakdown from SpotTrack of the deal that was negotiated by the legend himself, Drew Rosenhaus. This upcoming year will be the last of his first deal, making just more than $1.1 million. In the 2025, the big bucks come in. A base salary of $13.2 million for Brown, and then in 2026, he'll get $18.1. 2027, 20.8, and then in 2028, it's 21.8. Every year carries a $500,000 workout bonus. And in 2025 and 26, he'll get an $850,000 roster bonus. The last 2 years have a $1.7 million roster bonus. There's also various per-game active game bonuses built into the deal as well. And you see the cap hit here built into that long-term deal.
He's doing all right.
Oh, yeah, he is doing more than all right. Well, for a number of young linebackers, Panther great Luke Kuechly is a big influence.
Yeah, and that can be said for former NC State star Peyton Wilson, who is considered to be one of, if not the best inside linebacker in this year's draft class. Todd Gibson recently caught up with Wilson as the former Wolfpack star prepares to get the call of a lifetime.
Just over 24 hours after getting back from a visit with the Seattle Seahawks, former NC State star Peyton Wilson is back at work, with the NFL draft less than 2 weeks away. Zoom calls, phone calls, in-person meetings. It's been a busy stretch for Wilson as teams look to find out what makes him tick.
30 visits so far, and I got two more next week, and then I'll be done. The process is definitely, it's been fun. It's a dream come true, but at the end of the day, I'm just ready to hear my name called, no matter where it is or who it's to. Just excited to get back to playing football.
Last year, no one played better. Wilson put together the best season of his career, nabbing the Buckus Award, which goes to the nation's top linebacker. His pre-draft workouts were absolutely off the charts, including a 4.4 40-yard dash. Still, few mock drafts haven't been taken in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just my injury history. You know, these last 2 years I've stayed super healthy, which is a big plus. And, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, I think the film and the talent speaks for itself.
Wilson said there are a few teams that have been in contact more than others, but said he doesn't have a feel for who will ultimately call his name. That is out of his hands, but he does know how he will handle draft night.
It's just going to be me, my mom, and my daddy, and my girlfriend. We're just going to be at the house. My mom's probably going to make some real good food, and then, you know, we'll just wait around until I get that phone call. Not going to be anything too special, just cherishing the moment with some of the closest people in the world to me.
Those people and his faith have always been at the forefront of Wilson's life.
I truly believe that Jesus Christ has a plan for me, and, you know, wherever I end up, whatever pick that is, I'm going to be so excited for it.
And you can bet that team will be excited as well.
It's my passion. I love doing this, and this is what God wants me to do.
Coming up on CSL, a much-needed history lesson from one man who refuses to let important memories die. Why he feels the legacy of the Negro League is more important now than ever before.
I try to be an inspiration for our kids that we, you know, coach here at the school.
He teaches kids a sport that requires skill and strength. How this Statesville archery coach's life is a lesson in those talents and perseverance. That's next here on Charlotte Sports Live.
Back here on CSL, MLB officials will continue the annual tradition tomorrow, April 15th, of wearing Jackie Robinson's iconic jersey number 42. On that day, 76 years ago, Jackie Robinson made his major league debut, breaking the color barrier in the major leagues. Every year, baseball honors Jackie's legacy by celebrating his life, values, and accomplishments. Robinson's number was retired throughout the majors back in 1997. And over the past 10 years, the Charlotte Knights have turned back the clocks and paid homage to Negro League Baseball with their annual Negro League Tribute Night at Truist Field. Now this year, a member of the Knights coaching staff has a special connection to the rich history of black baseball. Here's that story. Since 2015, Negro League Baseball historian Ray Banks has always looked forward to making his annual trek to Charlotte to bring his museum to new fans.
I just love coming down and to see this beautiful ballpark. If I wasn't so far away, 8 hours away, I'd be down there maybe every other day.
Banks is the co-founder of the Hubert V. Simmons Museum of Negro League Baseball in Baltimore. His traveling museum is one of the many things that makes the Charlotte Knights annual Negro League Tribute Night extra special.
I've been doing this for a long time. It's not work for me, as I mentioned before. It's my passion. I love doing this. And this is what God wants me to do.
While Banks helps fans learn about Negro League history, one man on the Knights coaching staff had a front row seat to the sport's past growing up. 1992 American League Rookie of the Year Pat LaStache is in his first season as Charlotte's bench coach. He's continuing the legacy of his late grandfather, Nora, who played in the Negro Leagues in the 1940s for the Birmingham Black Barons.
I grew up listening to my grandfather tell stories about how difficult it was traveling and barnstorming and not being able to stay in the same hotels as other people, and just the way baseball was.
And one could argue there is still work to be done to help grow the game in the black community. According to an AP report, only 6% of players in the bigs today are African American, down from the 17% in 1992 when LaStache first came into the league.
You name the team, and I can name the players I looked up to, the Dave Parkers in Pittsburgh and the Willie Stargells, but I can go on and on and name those players, and they're not there now, so we do have a long way to go.
As the 56-year-old continues his coaching career here in the Queen City, he's helping to spark a change, which is something he knows his grandfather would be proud of.
Just to be able to make it, it's a long shot, but, you know, I made it. I succeeded, and now I'm trying to help other people succeed, so he would be proud.
with the Knights. Gabe McDonald, Charlotte Sports Live.
Awesome stuff, Gabe. All right, more college basketball news from this week. Duke basketball's two leading scorers from this past season are ditching Durham for the pros. All-American Kyle Filipowski and ACC All-Freshman selection Jared McCain have announced they are entering the NBA draft. Seven-footer Filipowski led the Blue Devils in scoring and rebounding, averaging about 16 points and 8 boards, while McCain averaged a shade over 14 points a game. Duke's season ended in the NCAA tournament's South Regional Final, losing to NC State. Well, two decades ago, a Statesville man feared that life as he knew it was over. But Bobby Griffith says archery made him feel whole again. Later this month, he'll represent the U.S. in an international competition. Queen City News reporter John Lee has the story.
All right, here we go.
No matter what the sport, a good coach helps you stay on target.
That was kind of low there, Seth.
Robert Griffith is the archery coach at Cornerstone Christian Academy.
So don't shoot the same distance every time.
You can call him Bobby.
Well, I enjoy coaching because I enjoy passing along the sport of archery. You need to stick with the bow that you're going to shoot.
Bobby's son, CJ, is an accomplished archer, too.
He's never really forced me to shoot archery. It's been something that I've seen him do.
I try to be an inspiration for our kids that we, you know, coach here at the school.
When students first meet Bobby, questions are inevitable.
Kids have no filter. Some of them will just come right up and come right out and say, hey, you know, what happened to your leg or where is your leg? And my kids have some funny stories they tell.
How he was deep sea fishing and they caught a shark and it had got his leg.
The real story about how Robert lost his leg isn't quite as spectacular as the fake ones, but it's every bit as compelling.
It was March 6, 1990.
His mother still has the crumpled newspaper clippings. He was 16 when he tried to help a stranded motorist off U.S. 321 south of Blowing Rock.
And I was pushing her car from behind, and another car came up the road and just sandwiched me right between the two cars.
After doctors amputated his right leg, he was hailed as a good Samaritan just trying to help. The multi-sport athlete couldn't compete like he used to, but archery gave him a shot at finding his way.
It helped me in the fact that it gave me something to focus on. So that there was just not like, you know, not like everything was lost, you know, that there was still something that I could, you know, get out and do.
Soon, he'll compete for Team USA Archery at the Parapan American Championship in Brazil.
It's just such an honor to be able to compete, you know, and have the, you know, the American flag and represent your country.
Meanwhile, CJ, who does not have a disability, was selected for Team USA's Red Team.
And I'm really excited for this year because I get to be on it with my dad, you know.
Good job.
Bobby encourages more people to give archery a try.
And especially if there's anybody that has any disabilities that, you know, are interested in shooting archery, hopefully, you know, they'll see that it is a possibility.
It's never been an excuse for him. It's never been anything that hinders him.
34 years after his leg was amputated, Bobby helps grow the sport because what it's done for him is immeasurable.
What you have to do here is what's called gap shooting, which is going to be right between the two pins, okay? Yeah, so you have to put kind of this one above the center and this one below the center, and that should put you right in there.
But he's more than just a coach. He's also an ambassador for archery.
Ah, look at that. Good job.
In Statesville.
Exactly.
John Lee.
Perfect.
Queen City News.
All right, thanks, John. The Parapan American Championship in Brazil starts April 21st. His son CJ competes for the Red Team next month in Florida. Well, Major League Baseball's top-ranked prospect, has knocked another item off his bucket list. The Orioles' Jackson Holliday got his first big league hit today in the seventh inning of a 6-4 win over the Brewers. Holliday was 0-for-13 with 9 strikeouts since his call-up to Baltimore this past week. That was before that single. So a crown-worthy moment for the Orioles youngster. We have more other top moments coming up next.
Right, back here to wrap up CSL. We are your official home for the Panthers, and that means the most extensive draft coverage in the Carolinas. Join us April 26th at 7:30 p.m. for our Panthers draft special. We'll analyze Carolina's 2 second-round selections plus bring you exclusive interviews with the team. Again, April 26th at 7:30 right here on Fox Charlotte. And before we send you guys to bed tonight on this wonderful Sunday, we got to hand out our QC crowns. Grace, lead us off tonight. Who you got?
All right, well, we just saw Jackson Holliday, the youngster, get his first hit, but my crown tonight going to a guy that's had a couple of those in his career, including home runs. He's a legend back home in PA. Andrew McCutchen gets my crown tonight as he hit his 300th career home run today. It gave the Pirates a 9-2 lead that would hold for the win over the Phillies. I love that it happened in state too, so then all the Pennsylvania fans can see it. But 300 is an elite club. Only nine other active players have reached that milestone, and the other one was one of the other ones. On the field with
him. I love watching him growing up, you know, having the dreads. Like that was fun. He's always been one of my favorite players growing up.
So good to Kutch see is great.
Oh yeah, he's nice. He's nice. All right, we're giving out my crown to one of the legends of our industry, the great Vern Lundquist, signed off from the Masters for the final time this afternoon. And check this out, having a moment with Tiger Woods during his final round. Tiger taking some time to share a moment with Lundquist, who has been calling the Masters for the past 40 years. Of course, we all know Vern for calling SEC games, college basketball games. He's one of the great voices and talents in our industry, so finally signing off. So a really cool moment here between two legends in their own right. Of course, Tiger Woods, but Vern Lundquist, definitely one of the best.
That is just so awesome to see. Just the respect and the honor of tradition that the Masters did all week. It's just, that's why everybody loves that event.
Absolutely. A fun weekend for golf, for sure. For Grace Grill, Michael Sett, I'm Gabe McDonald. See you guys tomorrow night. Good night.